Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello there, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
I do.
The excitement of walking down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally picking out the movie you were going to take home with you.
Yeah.
Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house, but there was something truly special about making that trip in your dad's big rig, picking a movie out by hand, and watching when you got home. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, two dudes who do podcasting instead of TV because of the problem with their faces. Sean Pryor and AJ Benz, how the heck are ya?
Got a face for radio, even though radio is pretty much dead at this point. And I don't even like my voice, so I don't even know why I'm here.
Just listen to old Pork Chopper. You'll get your own gush at the end of my lush. I don't know.
The check is in the mail.
Do you do a good Kurt Russell?
How do you do Kurt Russell?
I think I've heard people do it, and you're like, that's Kurt
Russell.
Just
do like John Wayne, but younger.
Gotcha. Okay. So the Duke, but...
Younger. Yeah. Work on it as we get there, okay?
Okay. I'll do that.
Well, boys, on today's episode, we discuss a movie our fans have been begging for us to do for a long time. One of the most entertaining action comedies ever made. A movie that perhaps was an important inspiration for Mortal Kombat.
Oh. Hey.
Our second John Carpenter, Kurt Russell offering. We are, of course, talking about 1986's Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Well, damn dang it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another nostalgic journey to the past with the Confused Breakfast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy wherever you are in the world. Take it away, boys.
Well, if you are new to this podcast, we're going to be reviewing Big Trouble in Little China movies, scenes, all of it, scene by scene.
That's me.
We're going to be talking about this movie with a modern eye, but in order to do that properly, we got to talk about it nostalgically first, because so many people, they live in nostalgia. They're like, it was awesome when I saw it as a kid.
It can't be bad now.
I don't have a neck anymore, but it's cool.
So you gotta review it with a modern eye, guys.
Don't ruin my childhood. I'll shoot your beer cans.
So we're fuckers. I think we're going to start with Sean, because I don't think AJ's alive after that. Sean, tell us the first time you saw this movie, what your nostalgic rating is.
I have had a tumultuous relationship with this movie. For some reason, I am such a huge John Carpenter fan, and as soon as I got into his movies from Halloween on in, the poster for it kind of gave me weird vibes. I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch like a weird comedy by John Carpenter, and then I had known that it was a great movie in like movie reviewers and everything like that circles. So
you
I
were
put
afraid
it on.
You weren't gonna like it.
I guess so. I put it on one night and fell asleep like halfway through, and I don't like doing that. So I'm like, I will wait to watch the movie, and so I waited. I don't know how many years, and so I put it on again. Fell asleep again. This happened like maybe three times. And then for this podcast, I put it on the first time and fell asleep. I don't know what it is about this movie, but I could not for the life of me get through it. And honestly, I can't give you a nostalgic rating because this is pretty much the first time that I've seen it all the way through.
Unbelievably
surprising.
That's the biggest
shock to me.
That is shock central.
We'll get to my rating at the end, but I don't know what it was about this, guys. This is like the only movie that's ever done this to me.
Jeez. Yeah,
we'll get there.
I could have never guessed that.
I'm sorry.
AJ?
Mike?
No. Did it happen again?
It happened again. We need a wager. We're like, oh, my God. You guys, it happened again. How is it possible that none of us have seen this movie?
This is upsetting.
I've put my eyes on it several times, but they just close. I don't know what happens.
Oh, man.
Okay, well, I had this whole spiel prepared to tell you guys to have this fun game of... Because remember, like, this is like my fifth out of six in a row that I have not seen. I mean, it's bad.
Oh.
Who do you think has not seen... I've gone back. Who do you think's not seen the most movies that we've done?
Oh, it's you.
Okay. By a lot?
I thought it was me up until
not by
recently.
Much. Not by much.
This, I have not seen, not including the Never Seen series, those are out. I've not seen 13 of the movies we've done.
Okay.
You both are tied with 11.
Wow.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That's how close it is. I was definitely in the lead. Like, I was good until recently, and I've gone bam, bam,
oh,
bam,
wow.
bam.
Okay.
Jeez.
Out of 100,
you know, take away the bonus type stuff, we're over 100, something like that. Nice. You know, 115, 120. So that's not bad.
Hey.
Before you hate on us.
Don't judge us. This is a good moment, and right. We will do this right. I promise you. I will anyway.
I actually feel like this might end up being better than, like, because we don't have to strip away the nostalgia now.
Yeah,
this is
that's
just,
true.
We're watching this with a modern eye, and yeah. We're going to give you a rating.
That's
so,
true.
I liked it better when I was a kid.
Okay, you can't review my movie that you haven't seen as a kid.
It's really underrated if you take a look at it.
Because I saw it as a kid, and you haven't seen it, so you can't talk about it poorly.
Vin Diesel.
All right, well, we are moving along then. We are going to talk about all the pertinent, important details of the movie. Sean, that is your job. What do you got, man?
Here we go. Produced by Larry Franco, Keith Burrish, and Paul Monash. Written by Gary Goldman and David Z. Weinstein. Let's say Weinstein.
Cool.
Music by John Carpenter and Alan
Craig
Howarth.
Died. You killed Craig.
Uh-oh. edited by Steve Merkovich, Mark Warner, and Edward Warshickel.
You got him.
Warshickel. Visual effects by Richard Edlund, who also did Ghostbusters. Actually, I think he won an Academy Award for... he used to work for... ILM, and I think he won an Academy Award for one of those movies, probably. Cinematography by Dean Cundey.
Oh.
Guys, I think it's time to face it. Dean Cundey is officially the director of photography of our nostalgia.
Cool.
Except for this movie, for our nostalgia.
You're right.
Yeah, I think he's just the champ. Can we just say that he's the champ on our podcast?
Go ahead and say it.
He is our cinematographer, Dean Cundey.
Dean Cundalingus.
Directed by the ever-loving motherfucker of greatness, John Carpenter. All right.
JC.
Cast. Kurt Russell, Kim Cattrall, Dennis Dunn, James Hong, Victor Wong, Kate Burton, Donald Lee, Carter Wong, Peter Kwong, Susie Pye, and Al Leong. Anytime he's in a movie, it's going
to
be badass.
This might be his third or fourth. In fact, gosh, I keep forgetting to do this.
I know.
Will do it moving forward. But Garrett Layoff. The number one Patreon member of all time has spent about a month putting together our how many actors have been in how many movies. And we will, this is my reminder moving forward, that we will bring this up every time you go through the segment.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we will talk about how many movies they've been in.
Yeah.
Because Al Leong's been in at least three now.
I feel like it's three.
Three to four at this point. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. The original script for Big Trouble was by Gary Goldman and David Weinstein. And focused on a cowboy in the 1880s stumbling upon an ancient Chinese evil. The film was to be a straight Western with the character of Jack Burton at the forefront. 20th Century Fox liked the project but was hesitant on the monetary needs the film would need to achieve the Western look. So they brought in W.D. Richter to modernize the story to present times and getting rid of almost everything except the story of Lo Pan. So it was like a straight Western before anything, and the studio was just like, no, we're not doing a stupid, weird, low budget Western with Chinese stuff in it. No one's gonna go to this. No one's going to go to
no
this.
No East versus meets West exactly. scenario here. Interesting. Yeah.
John Carpenter did his own pass through the script, scaling some fight sequences down, adding more meaningful scenes for Gracie Law, and toning down offensive traits some characters had toward Chinese Americans. Clint Eastwood and Jack Nicholson were both considered for the role of Jack Burton, but they were busy. I'm just trying to get Craig to move. So Clint Eastwood and Jack Nicholson were considered for the role of Jack Burton. Kurt Russell was hesitant on the role at first, but liked the notion of Jack Burton being the hero, but he isn't. A character that thinks he's Indiana Jones, but the circumstances are always too much for him. Jackie Chan was considered for the role of Wang, but wanted to go back to Hong Kong to work on police story movies instead. Carpenter met with Dennis Dunn twice before giving him the role. Dunn said that you don't see Chinese actors getting this opportunity in American films really ever. The chance to be an action star in American film was an experience the actor could not turn down. Production began and had a problem almost right away. Eddie Murphy was shooting a film called The Golden Child, dealing with similar subject matter. John Carpenter was even offered the directing job for Golden Child. He said, "How many films about Chinese mysticism have been made in the last 20 years? For two to come out around the same time is just insane." Because of this, the studio rushed production so Big Trouble could release 5 months before Golden Child. Big Trouble was released on July 2nd, 1986, and on a budget of $25 million, the film only made $11.1
million.
But has become a fan favorite for Carpenter Films and has become kind of a cult classic over the years.
Sure.
Well, listen, we are here at the Confused Breakfast, just three dudes trying to put out weekly podcast content for you to listen to. We're planning on doing this until, I believe, the year 2074.
Yeah.
So we need your help. There are two things you can do if you listen to this podcast every week. If you see that yellow logo pop up, you're like, ah, another episode. That means you love us. You need to, number one, go give us a five-star rating on Spotify or Apple Music. Whenever this happens all the time, whenever a video kind of pops off on the social medias, the Vin Diesel fans and such just start going, I hate you, you're stupid, here's a one-star rating. They never even listen to our podcast. It's right up their alley. They would love it. And they don't even listen to it, and they're like, one star. Yep. So just go give us a five-star rating, just real quick. Say some funny words. You can even be like, I hate these guys so much, five stars. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, I love that.
That'd be amazing. And the second best way to support us, go to patreon.com/confusedbreakfast. That is where you vote on upcoming movies. You got a private Discord channel. You get bonus weekly audio content. There is over 100 episodes now of you. You log in, you get instant access, you click on it, and you have 100 things to listen to.
Yeah.
And it will grow every single week. So go to patreon.com/confusedbreakfast. Check that out.
We have done at least two Vin Diesel movies that I know that he was in.
We know he's
so go back and listen to those and appease your weary mind.
Your weary mind.
Yep. Well, up next, we have AJ. He does the research for us, talks about the ratings, reviews of critics and fans alike. What do you got, man?
Oh, you guys know there's enough red to go around in this movie, I think. We're going to the tomato meter.
Yeah. Pretty good.
74% certified fresh.
All right.
On there.
Just below The Goonies, just above Coming to America of any movies we've done.
Above Coming to America? So
that's what the critics think. It's sandwiched in between Goonies and Coming to America.
I wonder how it stacks up against The Golden Child.
Not very good.
Yeah. Got it. It is 82% audience on Rotten Tomatoes, but a 7.2 on IMDb.
We've talked about this. A 7 is average. Yep. 7.1 is pretty good movie.
Pretty good. Yeah,
7.2 and above, like you are in elite category.
Didn't need to make a good movie, but you did.
Listen to this company. This is tied at number 44. Speed, Tremors, Major League, Lost Boys, Clue, Caddyshack. Oh.
So it's okay.
Out of all of those, which one don't you want to watch right now? Neither.
Neither? Nine.
Nine.
No. Weinstein.
Continue, AJ.
Yeah, it's a shoehorning.
Shoehorning. I loved reading the very positive reviews from critics on this movie. 90 out of 100. Scott Foundas at Voice said, Big Trouble in Little China is a far more enjoyable mashup of classic Westerns Saturday morning serials, and Chinese wuxia than any of the Indiana Jones movies, with Kurt Russell in full bloom as Carpenter's de rigueur.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Hard drinking, hard gambling, wisecracking, loner hero. A bowling alley, John Wayne.
Nice. Cool. I like that one is incredible.
Mark Bernadin at Entertainment said 83 out of 100. There are two kinds of people. The ones who have seen and love Big Trouble in Little China.
Uh-oh.
A John Carpenter kung fu western buddy Chinese ghost love story. And those poor saps who aren't burdened with having to try and describe it to the uninitiated.
Whew. That's our job today.
It's our job.
Yeah, this might suck.
So this is a 10 out of 10 from a reviewer, just a regular watcher in 2018.
The most important people.
Exactly. And he said, this movie doesn't contain a single irrelevant scene.
Nice.
Nay, not even a frame. Everything like is there for the sole reason of being awesome.
Hell yeah, dude.
A perfect movie. All right.
Who's that?
That was Geminov.
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 Okay. When was that written?
September 6th, 2018.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah. Not bad at all. How about this, guys? Some 1 out of 10s before we get too far into this. The worst movie I have ever seen,
yep,
said Super G19, February 9th, 2004. This movie has got to be one of the worst, if not the worst movies I have ever seen. Just restating that for us. The plot is absolutely abysmal. The acting is mediocre, and the least said about the special effects, the better. It made me regret paying £3.50.
There we go.
I don't think that's right.
You got it. To the video rental store. This film gets 1 star from me, and it's only because you can't give a lower rating.
Oh,
I got him.
I'm so innovative with my words.
Noticing a trend with these low ratings on these movies, for sure.
I would give it a 0, but
if I
can't
give it a 0, I would. 2 out of 10. Last one. 1 out of 10. Possibly the biggest load of drivel I've ever spent money to watch. And this was in 2000. Kim Cattrall is very pretty. That's the only good thing about this movie. The effects are unconvincing. Kurt Russell tries hard, but the material's against him.
Yeah.
Kim Cattrall's hot. I didn't like the rest of it. Thanks, Guy.
Thanks for your contribution. Thank you.
In the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
I guess after all the greatness from 99, that's
you're right, dude.
I mean, I guess that's what he had to compare against. So it makes perfect sense, actually.
Drivel.
Drivel.
This is drivel. It's not Fight Club.
What is the definition
or
of drivel?
Or chill factor.
I think of drivel as just like what falls from your mouth when you're eating.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
That's what I picture, too.
Absolute drivel.
Drivel.
I'll pick it up and eat it later.
It just says it's nonsense, so, but it could also be saliva or mucus.
So I wasn't far off.
So it's exactly what you want it to be.
I got it.
That is perfect timing, because the stuff wow. you don't want to fall out of your mouth is Cedar Ridge whiskey.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
That is something you cherish. You drink like this, you go, oh, and you kind of put your hand beneath it just in case a drop falls out. Because it is the best whiskey ever made. It's made in our backyard in Swisher, Iowa. They're killing it everywhere. They're winning awards all over for their bourbon, their flagship bourbon that Sean's got in his hands right now, the American Quintessential Single Malt. For Scotch lovers, and actually for people who don't love Scotch, because it's better than Scotch, because it's made in America. That's why we can't call it a Scotch. Oh. Their collaboration with Slipknot, number 9.
Yeah, dude.
Combining rye and bourbon together in different combinations. Cedar Ridge Whiskey is the best. You have to try it. If you can get it, your local distributor, you go there, you get it, you buy it. If you can't, you go online to CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. You can order some straight to your door, only if you promise to drink responsibly.
That's it.
That is the only thing. It's free. They send it to you. Just say, I will drink responsibly. And they go, here's your bottle.
Here you go. That's you got to be responsible.
That's definitely not true. But you will be glad you did, because Cedar Ridge is the best. And it fuels us And we love them. CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
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 People equals drivel.
Well, boys, it's time to start this movie scene by scene. That's to me. Everyone listening, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not done podcasting by dawn, call the president.
Yeah.
Here we go. So scene number one, truck driver Jack Burton gambles in Chinatown after making a delivery. He wins a bet against Wang Chi. To make sure he follows through on payment, Jack accompanies him to the airport to pick up Wang's Chinese fiance, Miao Yin, where a Chinese-American street gang, the Lords of Death, try to kidnap another Chinese girl. After Jack intervenes, they take Miao Yin instead.
Before he became grandpa and a ninja and a store owner in Tremors.
I don't know if he ever ages.
I don't think so.
He does. He's fucking awesome.
Yeah, Victor Wong is probably up there in our filmography.
He's been in three. I think of anything I've seen Victor Wong in, this is now my favorite.
I think so too.
It's my favorite for sure.
And it starts right with this opening scene, which did you read that about? Yeah. This opening scene was never supposed to be in the movie.
Right.
It was just supposed to start with the truck driving scene, but I love that they start with this because you immediately, apparently not Sean, but it immediately drew me in. And it was like, it was funny too, because even the verbiage they talk about, he says, you could be in a great deal of trouble.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so easy to say big trouble.
Big trouble?
But they say great deal.
Would you say
big trouble? Big trouble? I fucking love that they opened it with this.
I did too. And I think it's like weirdly good. Very well directed, in my opinion. Like, it's just like just two people sitting down talking, but there's like the shots are beautiful. Like,
the blinds are kind of perfectly on his face.
That, and then like there's some certain shots with like something in the foreground and then them in the background. It's just like, it doesn't need to be this good, but Dean Cundey and John Carpenter is a great combination, man. We just cannot state that enough. It's incredible.
It's good. It feels completely unnecessary to me.
This opening scene.
The opening scene. And after reading that, it made complete sense to me why it was there. And the only saving grace is Victor Wong. Because I think it's fine. Like, and the reason I like it is because we get Victor Wong earlier on in the movie than when he would have come in later
on. Oh, true.
You know what I mean?
It would have been a little while till he did get in the movie.
Yeah, till he really got into it, you know? And so I do like it for that regard, but that's about it. Otherwise, it feels a little forced. And I believe what I had read is that had this not been there, it would have opened up with him driving
the truck
down the road.
Yep.
And I would have been more engaged at that point, I guess. That's my opinion. Yeah.
I like it because because as we see, Jack Burton is really not the main character in this movie, to me.
But they set it up that way.
Very funny, kind of.
But I think they set it up purposely funny. Like, I think they set it up where, like, they're telling this legend about Jack Burton.
Yeah,
like,
so
like,
that's a good point.
You don't fuck with Jack Burton, man. Like, that's what Victor Wong is saying. And then you
leave
see Jack Burton, and then you see him in action, and he's like, he's a fucking dumbass. I love
but
it.
You don't.
Jack Burton should be, like, it should be the character from Last Action Hero or something, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger, tough guy, hard knocks, like shoot first, ask questions later. But then we get Jack Burton, bumbling truck driver guy who's running a podcast over his CB radio.
Yeah, but I like the setup of him like a legend.
Yeah,
I like it
because on first watch you're ready for it. You're like, okay, cool, man. Jack Burton's fucking. This is going to be awesome. He is going to be this hero. And it's not like in scene one, you're like, oh, they lied to us. Like, you still think this.
Yeah.
It takes a while. So you're watching this going, he's going to do it.
A cool guy.
He's going to do it. And slowly but surely they strip that away where that might not have stuck home. Yeah. I mean,
That is a good point. It is Victor Wong setting up Jack Burton
it's a big tale.
As a hero. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So that makes sense to me. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he is. Do you drive trucks that have walkie-talkie CBs in?
No, we don't have CBs, but I goddamn wish that we did. Because, well, I'm just like, I sometimes I get to the point of, like, I've ran out of my podcasts that I listen to. Like, Sword and Scale, it's not Monday. There's no new episode out, you know. What am I going to do, listen to music? I've listened to this album so many times. What I wish I could do is just spout fucking random facts about Tarantino. I'm just
like, yeah. Guys, hey, don't turn to channel 14 because it's just that Sean guy again. What would your truck driver name be?
Oh, it's, you know, QT Express.
QT? Or, they'll be like Cutie.
That's just Cutie 237 back there on CB.
Don't go to channel 14.
So if you want to compare Stanley Kubrick and Tarantino, then you have to kind of go back a little ways to the...
Well, the best part is he's old.
It's way better.
Devil comes down to Georgia.
If you don't know about CBs, like, it is true. Like, you engage it, you talk, and then you let go so that someone else can talk. So it's just Sean. It's just Sean for an hour spouting Quentin.
I have finally around the button.
Finally, he lets go. Some guy goes. Like, so he goes, "Is anybody out there?" And some guy goes, "No, and I don't care."
If it wouldn't be Tarantino, it'd be like ghost stories or something. I'd just like be falling asleep at the wheel for people listening, tuning into my show.
Mine, it'd be Devil Went Down on Georgia. That's what it'd be.
What? That's too long.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, this is Devil Went Down on Georgia.
Butt Putty.
Butt Putty.
Breaker to butt.
I know
buddy.
What yours
butt
would be.
Buddy, come on,
what?
Drew.
I know what Mike's would be.
Come on, what?
My cock.
My cock. Is he saying my cock? No, his last name's Hawk. My cock.
I don't understand.
No, I'd be Candy Cane.
Candy Ride. You'd be Beardy Blues McDrummer McDoozle 69420. That's
it would definitely end in 69420. I just don't know what else it would be.
You'd be Puka Shell 69420.
I do know we have some truck driver listeners and like, please tell us if this is correct. We love you guys for listening, and we hope we provide entertainment for you in those long drives so you don't have to listen to someone like Jack or Sean talking on the radio.
I do love, like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. Like, I don't.
It makes you wonder, I had to go back and go, is this happening at the end of the movie?
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
but it's not. I mean, he's wearing something different. He's eating a sandwich. And,
yeah.
So who knows what he's
talking about? The check is in the mail.
Yeah.
It's just a badass.
Who eats better than Kurt Russell in movies? Who eats better?
He does eat pretty good.
He does
he's a damn good eater.
Like, he eats that stew in the Hateful Eight. Yeah, I'm thinking of that. It makes me want to eat stew right now.
Didn't you say there's like another thing of like, it's like, is it Death Race or something? Death Proof? Death Proof, where he's eating nachos.
Nachos is the best looking. Yes, you're right. Absolutely. I watched that movie after this because I wanted to. The best looking nachos in the entire history of movies. Yes.
He's just, his mouth wraps around the sandwich in like kind of like somebody from the Creature Shop made it, like like Predator might, you know. I imagine it's just like, and then like that's how he gets at that sandwich, and he just like lines up his perfect bites. See, we got and then while he's talking. Well, I know what I'm doing. And then he's talking on the mic.
Yeah.
He goes back and forth. He does it so well. And most of the time you don't see people eating in movies and TV.
Right.
Because it's...
It's pointless.
It's pointless. Yeah. Right? It messes up shots. It messes up continuity, things like that. That's why people don't do it a lot. But him doing it is incredible.
Since we have all seen this now for the first time, did you think... So he's got... So Jack's playing cards with Wang Chi. I did not at all assume that these guys were actually friends. Mm-mm. Like this whole card game thing just made it feel like, uh-oh, what's going on with Wang Chi?
And
I did feel like that was a little strange. I don't know what really the reasoning was behind that. You don't, like, these guys are like apparently great friends and have been for a long time. So this weird little, like, he tries to hit him with the bottle. Is he doing that on purpose, trying to slice the bottle in half? And is he trying to purposely make it go and hit him in the head?
I don't think so. I think he's like actually trying to win his money back.
And he made a mistake.
Yeah.
You think so?
But it does seem like he's mad at him.
Yeah.
Like Wang is like upset with Jack. So I definitely, I felt that for sure.
Nothing to double. Have you ever said nothing or double?
It's always double or nothing.
Double or nothing.
I'd love to know if anybody out there has ever grown up saying nothing or double. That had nothing to do with this movie, because I'm pretty sure double or nothing's how you say it.
Also, I don't know what time he got there, but they've been gambling through the night at least for like 4 hours, right?
At least.
Maybe.
You think about he got there. They've been gambling in the rain.
Now the rain has stopped.
Yeah. That's what I want to go do, though. I would love to just like walk through a part of town like this, like Chinatown, and like go and see like the people have food carts and like try that kind of stuff. I would love that. And then you sit down and play cards and just gamble and drink beer. That'd be dope.
Seems pretty fun.
I want to be Jack Burton now.
I do too.
I want to be Kurt Russell, dude. Oh, look, my God.
He's the best. Good point.
Yes.
What do you think about the music of this movie? Because like I'm very into it. At times there were choices I didn't like. Because did John Carpenter do the music too?
Yeah.
But this is like a precursor to like Stranger Things. All this like like they really nail this kind of 80s synth in this movie to drive the story along.
Yeah, I like the score parts for sure.
Yes, yes,
the,
yeah.
Like the beginning, like that.
The opening one is great.
There's a music video for the song, especially at the end, that John Carpenter is in, and it's, look it up, it's so cringy. Like he's like in the music video on like the Big Trouble set doing the Big Trouble song with Tommy Lee Wallace, who I think production designed Halloween, and he made Halloween 3. Like there's like several filmmakers, aging filmmakers in a music video for this song.
Always wanted to be a rock star.
They made like a band, or they were in a band, and like they tribute that final song at the end. Should we talk about that right now, or should we wait till then?
We can wait.
Wait.
Okay.
We gotta wait.
But yeah, that band will get,
John Carpenter feels, for as good as he is, he feels like he would do a lot of cringy things.
Yeah.
Am I right on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you see him...
I'm John Carpenter. My name's always on the title of the movie.
Yeah, like John Carpenter's movie, you know? And then you see him in this music video, you're like, damn it.
God, you spend a lot of time wearing like straight-cut jeans and New Balance, don't you?
And smoking Marlboros.
Yeah, you tuck your Marlboros shirt in to without any belt.
He's the type... John Carpenter seems like the type that has, like... has jeans on, like blue jeans on, but then they're a little too short, and then he's wearing like the loafers that have the little tassels on them.
Oh yeah,
like brown loafers with really light colored jeans
with
the little tassels.
The little tassels.
Yeah, that just feels like something he would wear. Yeah,
Craig's got it up right now. We'll talk about it later.
It's bad. Oh, yeah. I can't.
Hit
wait.
It. If we were on a train to go punch a face, I'm on board.
That's what I'm talking about.
I had to think long and hard about this, but I think...
Nice.
I think it's the Lords of Death, the guy with the white fucking sunglasses.
I'm so glad you said that.
Okay.
Those never have I wanted to slap a pair of sunglasses off of someone in my entire life as much as this.
You mean the Foot Clan rejects?
Yeah, the squinty eyes sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they didn't... Yeah, they didn't.
How do you
make
see
it
out
into
that?
Foot Clan. Well... You don't. You just guess. And if you actually go back and look, Mike, he's holding on to his buddy's shoulder the whole
Is he
time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He can't see shit.
You know I hate bad guys in dumb glasses. Back to the Future, I punched 3D glasses in the past. Like, this is the one. Get out of
All
here.
All right. I'm in. I can't think of anybody else, really. Maybe the bloated
Thunders. Thunder's
wind
pretty
at
bad.
The end. Yeah.
Yeah, Thunder's pretty bad for me.
Or the eyeball, the floating eyeball thing.
That's true.
Hate that thing.
Yep.
Yeah, that thing's obnoxious.
We can disagree on white sunglasses, Lords of Death.
I don't know. I think that might be a lineup situation of just a...
Yeah, I don't mind the two other guys. I feel like they're pretty cool. Just the choice of sunglasses that day was not doing it for me.
I like when Wang is talking about his girlfriend. He's like, I'm going to marry her one day, Jack. She's going to put my life together. It's like, that's a... It's a lot of expectation for one person, Wayne.
It's a lot
you
to
haven't
put
seen
on
in
somebody.
5 years.
Yeah,
yeah. You haven't seen her in 5 years. You don't know what she's been up to. But, you don't know where, you know.
You're good, man. Just do you.
You're doing pretty well for yourself.
She's doing her.
Yeah. Don't put that expectation. You need to help yourself. Okay. BetterHelp.com. You need to help yourself first. You know, you just lost all this money, and apparently you were relying on that money, but you're gambling. I mean, you got your own problems to sort through, and I think
that's
important.
What makes you think Mao Yin's going to actually want you when she gets on that plane?
Maybe she just appreciates. Maybe she thinks you're just friends.
Oh, you know? Like you're her L.A. Right, this is like L.A., San Francisco.
It's basically Encino Man.
Basically Encino Man. yeah, she gets up like you're her contact for her visit here.
Yeah.
She's going to go see other friends.
Yeah.
Oh, she's got a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for dropping me off. I was going to go meet up with a couple of my friends in the Lords of Death.
Oh, I was going to see if you want to go. I was going to see if you want to go get some food or, you know, get some.
Oh, where did you want to go? Well, I own a restaurant. I don't want to go there. You know, she's not appreciative.
It's very true. Yeah.
The red flags start getting thrown up really fast.
Oh, and this just starts you really pulling you in on Jack Burton and how great Kurt Russell is. Like just these little comedic moments. Like he goes over to the reporter, Gracie Law.
Gracie Law.
And he talks to her, but then he turns around, Gracie Law leaves and he turns back and it's the elderly woman. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I fucking love him in this movie so much.
Can I ask you a serious question? Absolutely not. Like, the very quick dialogue is really great. It's really reminiscent of like those like 50s movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what John Carpenter wanted. He's like, he wanted like that snappy His Girl Friday, like one after the other kind of feel to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I really do like it. And I love a lot of his dialogue in here too. And as the movie goes on, we'll talk about, I think the movie's very aware of itself. Like the line he says, there's something very subtle when he's talking about when some guy 8 foot tall comes up, slams your favorite head against the back of a wall, asks you if you paid your dues, you tell him what old Jack tells you, checks in the mail.
It's pretty good.
Slams your favorite head against the wall. Like, I don't know. There's something very funny about that to me. And he just kind of glosses over this. He's sunglasses at night, borderline, you know, it's great. It's great.
Well, scene two, Jack and Wang track the Lords of Death to Chinatown, where a battle erupts between two ancient Chinese warrior societies. When the three storms appear, Jack attempts to gun his big rig through the crowd, but runs over David Lo Pan, a man directing the three storms. Wang hurriedly guides Jack through the alleys. They escape, but Jack's truck is stolen. Can I ask you, I was really hoping you guys have seen this movie. Because I still do not understand when that truck pulls into the alley.
Okay, can I talk about this for real quick sec? I'm a truck driver. If there's a tight
where you getting anxiety?
If there's a tight spot like that, I'm like, give me the phone number of whoever the fuck I'm meeting, because I need to know if I can turn around in there, if I need to back out, how long it is.
So you're saying
I'm not going in.
You're
there.
Saying Jack's a shitty truck driver and he should have just parked. And they should have got out and
without
out
a trailer.
Alley.
I think he'll be fine.
You don't know where that alleyway goes.
That's true. And it leads to
no backup cameras.
Fucking chaos.
Well, okay. So as they pull in, there's this weird shot of Lo Pan as like a normal guy.
Yeah.
He's like a homeless guy in the alley. That is never addressed. It is one of three different things we see him as, but we see him as the full blown apparition, kind of like. Mm-hmm. With the makeup on, and then we see him as the old man. But why is he this weird, weird young guy,
homeless guy?
And he just watches the truck go by, and he goes, And then we never see him again.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an explanation to it, but I've watched this now 3-4 times trying to figure out what the hell that was. And they never do you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly what you're talking about. And I remember, I thought the same thing.
Oh, he's in this movie.
And I was waiting for him on my second watch through. I was waiting for him to kind of pop up again, if you will. But it's like he's just there.
Yeah.
You know? And then he wasn't. It's like we needed to put him in there. But again, when he's the full apparition, as you say, his face is like a different color. Like his skin is a different color to kind of show like he's a ghost almost. Yeah. But as that homeless man, he's like,
he looks normal.
Flesh toned.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, I don't know. It's just not much explanation.
I'll be honest. I had to look up like some videos on YouTube to like help me out with understanding the whole Lo Pan myth and everything like that, and actually what he wants.
Because it's based off of some mythical things.
Yeah,
right?
It's based off some like quote unquote real things, or Chinese mythical kind of stories. But I had to like go kind of deep and try and understand actually what the hell was really going on amidst all the fun I was having from this movie.
Right, and it is a little hard to understand too, because like these Lords of Death are trying to just kidnap the random girl.
Yeah,
Gracie Law's there. And they have nothing to do with the evil people. They're just taking her to a brothel.
Yep.
And it takes a long time to be like, no, wait. But they took Mao Yin. But they took her to a brothel. Oh, and then they come in and get her from there. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's this story's just like this.
Well, then you have this gang fight, which is all like actually pretty great. Like the directing in this is actually like the fight scenes are like pretty good, all in camera, you know, like no like shaky cam or anything. It's like one shot here, one shot there, kind of strikes with everybody and like shooting. I feel like though, one thing that I had in mind was like, if it's a gang fight, you have to like kind of come to terms of like, is it a gunfight that we're having, or are we doing like hand to hand shit and like with weapons?
Yeah,
because they start off with blasting everybody and then they ran out of ammo.
It seemed like they were all on the same page, though.
I guess.
Like we don't know the rules, but they're like, yep, when we meet in the street, it'll be gunfight for 5 minutes, and then whoever's left, hand-to-hand.
Like, it's another form of, like, a Revolutionary War kind of line.
Damn, yeah.
I think I had this little thought about it, that especially in that moment, right, when they're in the truck and they're watching this all happen, and especially, you know, it's these references that they don't want to like make flat out. But Wang says it's a Chinese standoff. Don't make a sound. The guy comes out like with the bandoliers as if it's like a Mexican standoff. But then you have the same thing where then they all pull out guns and Jack pulls out a knife that he brought to a gunfight. You know, so it's like there's all these little references, you know, that they just don't want to flat out say or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part of it that, like I say, the movie, you start to realize the movie's very aware of the jokes that it's playing on, but it glosses over them so quickly that it makes it smart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can see why this movie would be endlessly rewatchable. I'm already like, yeah, I can't wait to watch that again.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like you're going to pick up on a lot of different things as it goes on. Even the, I don't know, we talked about like the Mortal Kombat inspiration. Like there's a school of thought that really does think that this was like this movie based the Mortal Kombat creators and games. I mean, they think that the Three Storms, that you got the Lightning, Raiden.
Basically you have Raiden.
I was watching it with my fiance. She's like, that's Raiden. I'm like, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're even thinking like Lo Pan is Shang Tsung.
Yeah,
I mean, 100%. Like, I like this movie better than what Mortal Kombat did. Like, I feel like it's got this campiness to it, but like it just feels better. Like, I like what this movie did better than what Mortal Kombat movie did.
There is a part of me though that sees the hats that the Three Storms are wearing, and
I know.
Just it's Dark Helmet. It's just Dark Helmet, guys.
How do you see out of that?
Come on, how do you see out of that? That's not convenient. Come on. Come on.
Come on, Dark Helmet.
I like when they come down, they do this whole like those guys shoot at him and they're not fazed by it. And then they do this whole dance routine just to throw a knife at him.
Yeah.
And it's like a
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they flip and then throw it.
And then they throw it.
It's
I know.
The flip doesn't help the inertia. They stop flipping and then they throw the knife. I'm like
I do have to take it back for like 2 seconds on the idea that you talked about, that you touched on, Mike, that they go in, they're going to kidnap Tara, Gracie Law's friend, pretty much. That's the idea. Instead, Miao Yin gets caught in the middle of it. And had that not happened, then there might not have been a lead to this Miao Yin person. So the fact that she got in the way is the reason this story continues on. And then they're running out of that place And it made me think of a story about my friend Nick and how he got kicked out of a bar for really not doing much of anything wrong. But the bouncer decided to ask him, look, we can either do this the easy way or the hard way. And he says, looks him dead in the eyes and says, the hard way, and goes full limp.
Oh, my God.
Why didn't Mao Yin just go full limp? And she's instead she's running with the Lords of Death.
I was thinking that
full
too.
Out. And I'm just like, no, just go dead weight. It's completely fine. But the fact is that the story only continues, not because like they do go to the brothel, which I can't wait for that scene, but just because the Lords of Death must relay this information to that other gang.
Do you think so? Because so Lords of Death call up Lo Pan's gang and say, we finally got a green-eyed woman. Why didn't they just take her straight there?
I don't know.
Right?
But so does that mean that the three storms would have just shown up at the restaurant, ripped the roof off of that building?
How did they know about it?
See? You know? So like maybe the White Tiger place is what called the other
I think they seem nefarious to me for sure.
Exactly.
They're just like, hey, Three Storms, can you just come in the front door? We'll tell you the password.
Yeah.
Just don't disrupt any of our guests,
please.
Please
don't tear the roof off.
Like you did last time.
I know it's fun to walk into a place and say, we're going to blow the roof off this place. Please don't do it this time. We can't. Insurance isn't covering it.
Like, anymore. I understand how it could be intimidating if you shoot at somebody and nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like the storms. But how intimidating is it when these storm guys come out of green smoke out of nowhere, not phased by bullets, and then one of them pulls out two back scratchers as a weapon?
Yeah, like those.
What?
And what are the spinny dials?
Those are like blenders.
Okay.
Oh yeah. My god, that no, it's hands. The inside of a garbage disposal.
Yeah.
Fuck.
So he's got magic bullets on his hands.
Yep.
You know, then he just makes smoothies for everybody.
Yeah.
Got it.
He turns his shot bullets at him into mush.
Who wants margaritas? Yeah.
Make margaritas, guys. Woo!
I wanted them on the rocks. Well,
I don't do that.
These aren't sharp enough for rocks. I'm sorry.
I got an itch. Will you get my back?
Yeah, I got you.
Thanks.
Well, let's go on to scene three then. So Wang takes Jack to his restaurant where they meet with Gracie, her journalist friend Margo, Wang's friend Eddie Lee, and magician Egg Shen. The group devises a plan to infiltrate a brothel where they believe Mao Yin is held. The group breaks into the brothel but are interrupted by the storms, who kidnap Mao Yin and take her to Lo Pan. What do you think about Eddie Lee?
He's my favorite.
Was it overdubbed?
I don't think so.
His lines?
Yeah.
And this is the like the suit guy that comes in,
like
the maitre d'.
He's played by Donald Lee. His name is Eddie Lee in the movie. Maybe it was just, I told you I have that weird little like projector in my bedroom now that I can watch on my wall. Maybe there was a lag there, but it just, he has such a very nice speaking voice.
I know
that it felt like it was overdubbed.
It's
but as I rewatched it, I was like, nah, I think that's. It's I think that's him.
And they even kind of make the joke like later on too when Egg comes in with everyone, like the other guys from the Sing. I can't remember the original the good guys.
Yeah, good guys.
Again, it's like those are the good guys. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling us. Exposition. We'll talk about that in a second. But I do really like his character, and they make a joke about it too. It's like any of these guys, speaking. It's like, hey man, who the hell is this guy? Like it's like okay, it's like now you're just being a dick, Jack. But I do really like that. I love Eddie's performance.
Yes.
I think he's my favorite character, kind of almost through the rest of the movie a little bit.
One of my favorite lines is when they're in the they're in the Chinese. Fucking Wang's shop. Jack is like on the phone with his insurance company, it seems.
So good.
It's so funny, and he's like kind of yelling at Wang about, he's like, I lost my goddamn tricks. How do you think I feel, Jack? I lost a whole girl.
That's whole
my
girl.
Fucking favorite line. I love that so much.
I know.
But also when Lee comes in, Jack is on the phone. He's like introducing, Wang is introducing him to Jack, and he's on the phone. He's like,
Yeah.
I love that shot so much.
We've all been there before where you're like, you're on a really important call and somebody's like, hey, why don't you meet my friend? Yeah.
Hello. No, don't transfer. Is this a group line? What is it? I got to pay you guys $6,000 a year. You can't do it. It's like, don't tell me it's not going to be covered by weather. Just going off. Classic jargon of dealing with like an insurance like thing, you
he's
know,
so mad.
Making a claim.
He's so pissed. He was realizing that like, had he just gotten the money or just said, hey, you'll owe me the money. And he did not go to the airport with him. They're like, he'd be on his way. He'd have his truck. Everything would be fine.
Yep.
And I think everything wouldn't have happened if Jack wouldn't have gone and tried to talk to Gracie Law.
Jack fucked everything up.
Yep.
But he doesn't know that he fucked. He yes. could be. He thinks he could be back in his truck doing his podcast and like talking to all the other truckers. And now he's got to deal with trying to find his missing truck and his insurance and shit.
Yep.
Nerd Jack Burton.
Dude.
Is so funny.
Okay. Did anybody else think who else this reminds you of him doing this character? You can do it.
I can't think of his name.
He doesn't
name.
Have it.
I can't think of his name. Rick Moranis.
Yeah, no.
Damn it.
Chris Farley.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
If you really, he's like, yeah, he's like, yeah, it's my game. He, you know, he comes all in. It's like, boy, it is raining cats and dogs out there. It's like when he probably, does that yes, chin tuck, that is all Chris Farley, and all he needed to be doing was this.
Yeah.
For a Chris Farley, like,
oh,
dead on.
Oh, gosh, cash, I guess. It's not deductible, is it?
Not deductible, is it?
His fucking laugh at that point, like, sent me into hysterics. Because he
so
goes,
good.
Cash, I guess, not deductible. Like, fucking, I don't know. It's so sad to me that I know a lot of Kurt Russell movies. You know, I like them. But now we've done two in this podcast that, like, that I haven't seen until we did this podcast. And I'm like, I love this man so much more. Every movie I see of his, I'm like, yep, you're moving up the ranks of one of my favorite actors ever.
Yeah.
It's funny because I go back and forth on like, he doesn't steal the show for me. Like, Kurt Russell, I like Kurt Russell a lot. Like, a big fan of Kurt Russell. He doesn't. He's not a scene stealer. He doesn't steal this for me at any point when he's on screen. You know, sometimes I think his performance is not phoned in, but not quite where I've seen it for Kurt Russell. But then you have something like this, where it's like, no, that's part of his character too.
Yeah.
Now I get it. You know, it took me till the second watch, like the halfway through, almost the second watch, to realize. Oh, that kind of over delivery is this character, very much so. And so it made me it took a while, but I really do like the performance now. And him doing this little caricature in the middle of it is fantastic.
That's why I like that this movie is more of a comedy than it is anything else. And then when it's an action movie, it's an action movie. But when it's comedy, it's like you nailed it. Like that is hilarious, you know. When the storms come in and do take Miao Yen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Miao Yen. When he just goes up to one of them and like lifts his hat and just punches him twice. And he's like, all right.
He's like, okay.
It's so fucking funny, man. I love that bit.
He absolutely is. And I think it was kind of his inspiration as he's worked with John Carpenter, you know, so many times now. Like when he did Escape from New York, you know, Pliskin was Clint Eastwood, is what he said. And this character was a more bumbling John Wayne, is what he kind of said. And you definitely get that in that delivery of, you know, you think of like John Wayne movies. Well, how the heck are you? They're a partner, that kind of thing.
Well, and, I'm a teetoper, aren't you a teetoper?
You know, that kind of talk. And he kind of mixes this in very much so to his cadence of creating this character like Jack Burton. It's really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I almost want to talk more about the quotes of this movie as we go along. Just some of those quick, we talked about how quick these lines are. Like, she's like, I'd go with you. I know there's a problem with your face. Because I love them together in this movie. Like Kim Cattrall and Kurt Russell have great chemistry. even though they're not supposed to, right?
Like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, whatever.
It's funny because in some of the dialogue is almost too fast. Like it skips over like almost chunks of conversation. Something about there's one part in particular where Wang is saying to, "Well, I'm going and I'm doing it this way." It's like, "Well, come move over, give me a ride." "Oh, thanks, Jack." Like that kind of thing. "I don't need you to go with me. I'll move over. I'll drive you. Thanks, Jack." It's not. And then he doubles back on his dialogue, saying, "I appreciate your help." That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe. Only watching it a couple of times, but if you listen to what they're saying, it's jumbled.
Yeah.
But it's on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, and then it almost jumbles itself into like a tumble. And then it like gets back up and you're like, "Oh, okay, now I can kind of grasp it."
Yeah. Like it took a Three Stooges like slip and fall and then got back up and brushed itself off. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in this dialogue. Yeah. It's very
Jack
funny.
Jack is like the Kurt Russell playing Jack is like the perfect burning the midnight oil, can't wait for my pension kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I there's like an everyman can't wait for retirement kind of guy. I love it so much. And yeah, I agree with him and Kim Cattrall together are very good, like surprisingly almost.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, because I've, you know, Kim Cattrall in Sex and the City, that's pretty much how anybody probably knows her.
Yeah, you think about Porky's her in a lot of things. Shit. Yeah, Police Academy. Wasn't she the mannequin in Mannequin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, she's had a pretty broad career for sure.
Yeah, I mean, her speaking, she's beautiful, obviously, but her speaking role and relationship with Kurt in this is very, very tumultuous. But I think we've talked about it before in several movies that we've done of like the contentious relationship turning into something, you know.
But that's the best part about this movie is it like doesn't.
Right. Yeah, right? We'll get there.
We'll get there for sure. All right, so scene four, Jack and Wang track them down and gain access to the Lopan hideout. They are caught and meet an old man version of Lopan. Jack and Wang's friends attempt to save them and are also captured. The group frees themselves and escapes, but not before Gracie is captured.
Best joke
ready?
Of this movie.
Okay, go.
You ready for it?
Ready, I'm ready.
All right. It's going to have to be Cracker Jack timing. Let's do it, Wang. All right. "Hey guys, phone company, telephone company coming through." And he's holding on to the phone. He's just got a whole phone.
It's like, "Oh, that's probably over there." Probably,
he's like, "Where's that junction box?" "Probably through here, right?" "All right, come on, guys."
No, that is like just act like you've been there before.
It is.
It's like, it's that scene. It's like carry a ladder into something.
Yes.
And they'll let you in.
Or a camera.
They'll
do anything.
Oh, it's a student project. All right,
whatever. Exactly.
He's just carrying an old rotary dial telephone through this thing, full receiver and handset and everything. And I lost it, guys. I lost it at that point, and I understood exactly what this movie was. It took me up until that time on the first watch to be like, "Got it."
Well, then they keep continuing then, because like my favorite joke is right after that when Jack's like, "What's that say on the wall?" He goes, hell of boiling oil. "You're kidding." "Yeah, I am." Says keep out. Because, man, who plays Wang?
Dennis Dunn. Yeah.
He's like very underrated. He's getting overshadowed by a lot of things in this movie.
I know.
He's awesome.
He's incredible.
He's the star.
Yes.
He's the hero. Yeah. He's the star and hero of this movie. And he does such a good job.
Yep.
Like, I will watch a movie without Kurt Russell and him, you know.
Up until this point, up throughout this whole thing, we haven't seen Jack Burton fight anybody.
No.
He's shot a couple people. I think coming up, he might shoot somebody. That's the best he's done. There are moments that where literally Wang has saved the entire day.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
What, these guys could have been a little smarter here, though. They're in that elevator. It starts flooding. He had just found this escape hatch, right? They're in this tube. He said it's salt water. Everybody knows you float in salt water.
Yeah.
Come on.
Just float up through the hatch. Let that water rise.
See?
Said they want to go down into the pool of dead people. Do you know what kind of bacteria is in that pool?
Oh, I can't.
If you have any open wounds,
oh yeah,
and you probably do.
You're done for at this point. Even like a scratch on your like and your thumb or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little paper cut. You're not going to do well in the pool of death.
Those chains are rusty and there's rotting corpses.
Ugh, upside down good, corpses, yeah. too. That's the worst kind.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what's worse is like contaminated salt water like that or getting thrown red balls at.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, and that, I thought that I think was pretty good. I think he starts off with just like air punching him. Like you're just like, and then like 10 feet away, he gets like, gut punched. But then he's like,
yeah.
Like what is this? Like clown? Are you a clown?
Are you a clown? You clown
going on?
Is this where they meet Lopan in the wheelchair the first time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right after this, they wheel him to like the commissary.
Yeah.
Pit of despair.
His office. Yeah.
The pit of despair. The pit of despair.
I'm gonna tell you. I think James Hong as Lopan. I think he might be the best performance in this movie.
I think you're right.
And you don't want to think that because you're just like, usually this type of movie, whoever the evil person is like, whatever. Like, you know, we've gone through so many movies, Super Mario Brothers, like even such a good actor as Dennis Hopper. It's like, well, it's the evil guy. Like,
yeah.
He's not. Lopan's so funny to me. Like even this back and forth.
Yeah.
Where they're like, it's been 2,000 years and there have been lots of women. Many, many women. There's been a lot of women. Like, I don't know why that's so funny to me that he's like, there's been a lot of women.
Well, I think
none of them were perfect.
I think that's why he's maybe the best performance of this movie, because he is so funny and he is like kind of scary, but he is, and not at the same time, a good bad guy, but then like he seems ridiculous, but then he seems like mystical, and like he does like portray this sort of like myth in real time very well, but is also like in on it, like Jack Burton is, it seems, you know. It seems like he's in on the comedy, he's in on like how ridiculous this is,
the glowing version of him.
Yeah,
very strange.
It's very creepy.
It's pretty creepy. I think it's a nice touch. I decided to think a little deep into this about why they wheeled them in wheelchairs that are exactly like Lopan's. And it's just like he can't not be on like an equal level or something with the people that he's like trying to torture or something. I don't know. It's like he's like, you got to be in the same thing that I'm in. But them hiding when Eddie gets brought in to where they're being held captive. Uh-huh. And then they basically hide again, and with the blindfolds, they're like, blindfolds, oh, the chair. It's like when they jump thunder, and then him trying to get out of the chair is also another very funny bit for me.
That is physical, underrated physical comedy.
It's that's borderline like Hot Shots levels of comedy, of just him being like,
and he could have just got out of the chair, but instead he like pushes the chair backwards to get out of it and falls down the pit.
It's just like this very like, it's a very long term joke of him rolling back up, rolling back down the thing. You know, it's a very long winded joke, like, but it pays off for
some reason.
It's
like he's seen this exact thing happen in a movie one time and was like, oh, I know what I'll do if I'm ever in that situation. And he just does that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it's like the thing you would like not do.
He's like, that's what I'll do because I'm not the hero.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not the hero. That's exactly right.
I just love how Lee is like, you ever plug somebody before? And it seems like legit because like you see the shot of Jack and he's like, oh shit.
Yeah, he's like
I just shot somebody. And like,
of
he says,
I have.
Yeah, of course I have. I was like, wait, have you, Lee?
Right, the
guy,
the maitre d',
you've killed somebody before. Jesus Christ!
Yeah, that must mean like Eddie has, right?
Oh, of course,
like
Eddie has.
He's more of
like, everybody knows that.
Nice
more of a
Eddie.
Badass than Jack Burton is.
Well, yeah. we're figuring that out as we go here, right? I did have a note. I wondered why Gracie was the only one that was hogtied in the prison.
Yeah,
like all the other people were walking around. I don't know if you read that, but apparently. This was all explained in a deleted scene. They never filmed it, but part of the script was that Gracie got put in the prison and was like verbally abusing guards and just being a handful. So they gagged and tied her up like that, where all the rest of them were just walking
around.
You
can kind of see that later when she gets captured again.
Yes.
You know, like she's talking shit to Lopan yep. and Thunder, I think it is.
Well, and she's...
And the rest of the gladiators. Yeah.
Think about the amount of exposition that
Tower.
She is...
Nigel.
There's the gladiators. there's so much exposition that just pours out of Gracie Law when she shows up at, like, yeah. the restaurant and... She's getting out of Lopan at points or another, and it's almost brutal,
just borderline.
And again, I know that it's part of the performance for her character, but at the same time, there is a point where it took me a little bit of time to understand that this is the character, and it's the writing, and it's the way that this movie is put together for her to just. Vomit exposition on
yeah.
us. It's very funny. She's the one who knows everything or wants to give it all about the Chinese mythology that's going on behind this, but none of the people who live there do. It's so like at one point Wang Chi says, "You really want to know, Jack?" It's like, "Yeah, I can handle it. I've seen some crazy things, but I'm not, you know, I'm fine. I can handle it." He's like, "You really want to know?" It's like, "Yeah, we don't know." It's like, what the heck, man?
Tell me.
Yeah, just tell us, man.
There's just like really good writing in this. I love that funniness of they're in the tunnel. They all went diving into the tunnel, which is terrifying to me. You never know there's going to be an air pocket on the other side.
Yeah. Geez.
And then she's like, where's Margo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's Eddie? Yeah. Where's Jack? Like they all take turns coming up and asking where another person is.
Very Goonies-esque at
yes.
that point.
Yeah, trust me, don't go down a YouTube rabbit hole of like cave exploring gone wrong.
Oh no. You guys have told me these things.
Just don't. I'll tell you another one where like these guys got sucked reverse pressured down into a pipe and they had to like keep swimming through a pipe because trying to find air pocket. Yeah, I don't like it.
I'm good.
I don't
I'm
like
not
it.
Doing that.
I'm going on a cruise and I'm staying on the boat.
No, don't do that.
Oh,
I'll send you a video about cruise disasters well, gone, yeah. bro.
You can't go anywhere these days.
You can't.
It's like planes. If something bad's gonna happen, it's gonna be when they take off or when they set anchor.
Yep,
that's how it happens.
What?
Yeah, that's really how it
that's
happens,
how it happens, dude. Man.
You know, cruising 101. I have a
you
YouTube
got
video.
See, Mike will help you out.
I love when. I love when Jack gets so he's got everyone with him yeah. after all this. He's got like pretty much they're trying to escape, and they get to this door. He's like, "I'm pretty sure we're good, you guys." The classic gag. He opens the door. They're all right there. Al Leong face yes. front. He's like, "Yeah, we're not going that way."
Well,
but then
I think we're trapped.
Everyone kind of like takes off except for Wang, and he's like, "Wang's ready to fight." And meanwhile, Jack is like loading his weapon and trying to like get his like shoes all ready to go.
Gets,
and shit.
Gets his knife.
Everyone's
out.
Knocked out by the time he's like, "Ha!"
Yeah.
I just love it. It's epitome of his character.
And at no point does Wang ever look at him like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like he was as I mean, Wang was very focused on fighting. As far as he know, as far as he knows, Jack took out a couple of them.
It's true. It's
you know true. What I mean? It's like
it's very true.
There was a lot going on.
If they're good friends, you take every opportunity you can to make fun of your friend if they suck at something.
Exactly.
So Wang's either the nicest guy in the world or he just doesn't know.
He's just ignorantly, blissfully ignorant. That's what it is.
I think this is the best part. I cannot speak. We try to talk about this, how you can't talk about older movies in a modern eye without running into some issues. And I know that there are some people that think that this movie is incredibly racist and that it's just making fun of Chinese culture and portraying Chinese as like dumb and magic, believe in magic, and I can't comment on that because I'm not Asian.
Yeah.
But like what I really love about this movie is that it's like 95% Asian actors,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and they're making fun of the American, the bumbling, loud yeah. American guy. This is America seen on the world scene of like, yeah, we're so cool, we're loud, and we got bravado, but we really don't know what we're doing sometimes. And I love that. I don't know if they were trying to do this, but I love that you think Jack is the guy, and he's not. We're slowly realizing he's the reason this whole thing is happening. And Wang just goes about his business, quiet hero, and gets it done.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I know I can't make social commentary on that because I'm not, I can't fully understand this, but sure. But I think it's really awesome.
I 100% agree with you. I think this movie without Jack Burton would be this movie would like have kind of like the same similar story structure, but like maybe more like talking scenes, you know, maybe not like a lot more act. Maybe shit doesn't go so far downhill as Jack makes it, you know. I think it would have been that anyway. Like, I don't know. You're right. You can't speak to that kind of experience that we have never had and never will. But as far as I know, this is extremely refreshing to see that they do a story. Like, even the Dennis Dunn as Wang was like, you never see this. Like, yeah. I never see movies with people who look like me as, like, pretty much the starring role. And he does a fucking great job.
He does an awesome job.
And it's a great story. And like, as long as you're a good fucking movie, I don't care what you do. Like,
yeah.
I don't care what kind of representation you have or don't have, you know, as long as you tell a good story, whatever. And this is a great fucking story.
You see this, like, I mean, an awesome all-star cast of Asian actresses that are in this. It's great. Like, it's really great to see. And it makes it even better that Jack Burton is the funny character. He is the comic relief of this movie.
The bumbling sidekick idiot.
Yeah, exactly. It's very funny. That's hilarious.
Yes.
That's
all
I can say.
It's really great.
He's wonderful. He plays a man who's completely out of his element, but he feels like he's in his element.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like how?
Oh, yeah, I can do this.
he's an accidental hero, but the hero he thinks he is not what he actually is.
Right.
All.
And they're completely fine with like letting him take, as we saw in the very beginning, they're completely fine with like letting him take this like kind of like hero's stand or like or point of this story, so they can just like, so they don't have to deal with other people coming into their world, coming into this world, right? Like Jack's a hero. Like thank God he showed up and just, we can just blame it on him. Idiot.
Before we do the last scene, if this is indeed an inspiration for Mortal Kombat, then this fucking creature is Goro.
Yeah.
Oh, you think so?
I thought you guys were going to have a big problem with this just coming out of nowhere.
This is why it's not a perfect movie for me. I don't like this creature. I don't like the floating eyeball head. That feels a little too much like they're like, yeah, we need something else. We just need a reason why Gracie doesn't make it out. How about a weird monster? A
huge monster hand.
Yeah.
Grabs her.
I did not enjoy this as much as some of the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie. It's a movie that just starts to, it just continues to get crazier, and it just escalates and escalates and escalates. It gets crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier. Let's go.
Okay. So scene 5, Lo Pan decides to marry Gracie and Miao Ying. Wang and Jack regroup and enter a cavern to return to Lo Pan's headquarters. They interrupt the wedding and start a battle. Jack kills Lo Pan and the group escapes. The group celebrates before going their separate ways. Before you say that, AJ.
Yes.
Mind-blowing fact of the day. That's my new segment.
Okay.
Nice.
It's not
mind blowers. Blow me, Mike.
Did you okay? So before, as they regroup, before they go down into the tunnel, did you recognize Egg Shen's location, his little headquarters warehouse?
No.
It is Fire Station 23, the same building used for the interior of Ghostbusters.
Oh, shit.
When you see it, you go, whoa. They walk into it, and it is the interior of Ghostbusters.
It's very narrow.
Narrow
kind of.
With the big archway.
Yeah.
Then they're going up
then
and down like fire poles.
Fire pole.
It was all inside of that building.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Once you see it, it's mind-blowing to be and people are like, oh, weird. They filmed the movie twice, two different movies in the same set. It's like, I thought it was cool.
Fuck me, I guess.
Fuck me, I guess. That was super cool.
Oh, right.
I'm going on record to predict what the comments will be on the TikTok video, so you got it.
I do love that. I really do love that. I think that's awesome. It doesn't make sense that like that's his shop.
Right.
It's like
he's a rich man.
It turns out he's a rich man.
He's got a really nice office space.
As they go down into this, they go down the fire pole.
Am I afraid? Are you kidding? Love that.
And like one of the guys that's with him gets eaten by this giant ant thing, and he takes out some marbles from a bag, throws them. Do not come out again. And we never see that thing again.
But it's even great. So you couldn't have gone down there before we all went down there and done your little marble shit.
But it's so great because he says something like, come out no more.
No more.
And he goes, what will come out no more?
What was that thing? He's infatuated with it. It's like they have all these fancy terms for things. It's like black blood of the earth. What, you mean like oil? No, black blood of the earth.
The lines never end at this point. Like that, this is when you get the hollow? Hollow! Fuck it. He just goes right to the door. Like, hollow? Hollow. Fuck it.
Slashes through it a couple times and then reaches through and unlocks it from the inside. Did you see that?
Yes. It's like... It never stops at this point. I think you said it, AJ. It's just like, it's nonstop at this point.
It's nonstop. And this is another one of my favorite things where it's like, we have to, this is how we have to fight him. We have to fight black magic with black magic. And it's like, what's in the flask, egg? Magic potion? Yeah. Thought so. Good. What do we do with it? Drink it? Yeah. Good. Thought so.
Dude, it's some of my favorite exchanges right there. I love those lines so much.
Sets up at the bar, just pours everyone a drink. And they get on that elevator, and it's just like, I don't know about you guys.
There's a lot of touching going on,
too.
I feel
pretty good, yeah. And then my favorite line for you, my favorite line from Dennis Dunn is, I have a very positive feeling about the outcome of what's going to happen.
All right. All right, Wayne.
This is the same way I feel when I get a good buzz going.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just like, this is great.
Good buzz.
Do you guys have a toast that you do if you're among friends and you're going to take a shot or something like that? They go with some pretty cheese ball toast there, you know, like the may the feathers never fall off the eagle of freedom or something like that. Do you have a go-to line that you say?
Cheers.
Cheers?
Yep.
You don't try to be all fancy and be like salute.
I don't know.
Or slancha.
Pretty simple, man.
Do you have one that you do? They were ready. Like that was like their go-to.
Yeah, they knew. Well, if you can't come on or no, I don't.
One that you can use in a setting of business.
Oh, no, never
folk?
Been.
No.
No.
All right.
Let's shoot.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. How about it, guys?
Nah.
No.
How about we drink now?
Yes.
Do you want to hear mine?
Here's to
you. I haven't used it in forever, but this movie reminded me of it. Do you want to hear it?
I feel like I'm going to have heard it before.
Can we just real quick pour a little Cedar Ridge?
A little Cedar Ridge.
Let's see if this works. Let's see how you feel about this.
Good buzz. Yeah.
Good buzz.
What's in the flask, Mike?
All right. Ready? This is my go-to. I thought it was pretty cool back in college. Ready? Here's the fighting, cheating, stealing, and drinking. If you're going to fight, you fight for a brother. You're going to cheat, you cheat death. You're going to steal, you steal a woman's heart. You're going to drink, you drink with me.
Oh. Oh. Who said that?
Ooh, good buzz. Warm buzz.
I think that was Ernest Borgnine originally.
Ernest in Airwolf, yes. Yeah.
Nice.
That was what John Michael Vincent said in Airwolf.
In Air Bud? Nice.
Anyway,
Wolf.
Gotcha.
The girls' makeup and costuming and like this wedding kind of ceremony is outstanding.
Yeah,
like they look so good. And like honestly, throughout the whole movie, the costuming and even the production design is really, really outstanding. And I think it adds so much to it. Every time, especially those girls are on camera with like that wedding attire, apparently. It's just visually striking, and I can't take my eyes off them. It helps that they are extremely beautiful. Yes, but
doesn't it feel like this area they're hanging out in for the ceremony feels like a just a mall in the 80s?
The escalator.
it's got neon.
Are you talking about
a reversible escalator?
Are you talking about like their, where they have the ceremony?
Lair, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, they throw some killer raves down there. That place is a nightclub beyond nightclub. Like, this is a place in Vegas you can go to.
Lopan rented this out for the night. Yeah, okay, because normally there would be something else happening down there.
He rented it for dual ceremony reception.
Yeah,
you know, that's what he did, and he's probably got Alice Cooper that's going to be playing that night.
You throw. Well, speaking of that, like when he's going over to the floating Miao Yang, he like skateboards on over,
yeah,
like Wayne does to what's her name in Wayne's World.
Jesus,
you fuckers!
Wait!
You guys are fuckers.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You guys are absolute fuckers.
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about. No,
Sean, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's fine.
Can you provide any video evidence for me?
When he like floats over to her at the bar and it's like, hey, hi, Wayne. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I was sorry. I can only think of, if you say Wayne's World during this movie, I can only think of Wayne's World 2 because Lopan is Cassandra's father.
Well, oh, yeah.
That's the only thing that's been going through my head.
Okay, thank God we're back. Fucking derailed it once again.
Oh, there is a. I do really like it because
a fucking movie reference on a movie podcast.
How dare you,
Christ!
There's an exchange between Miao Yin and Lopan. Can I talk about that?
Sure.
All right. She says, "I don't belong to you," and Lopan's like, "You don't. You belong to Cheng Dai. I must sacrifice you, but I love you and I need you." No. Here, take her. Take the bitch. It's like, what?
Do you know if they remade this movie, do you know who would play Lopan?
Oh, who?
Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong.
That weird humor and like high pitchiness of his voice from time to time.
Oh yeah.
Don't you think he could play it?
Oh, that's spot on. That like he it, and his delivery would be like right there. You know what I mean?
Take the bitch.
You know, that kind of, oh man, that'd be great.
I think that'd be amazing.
He also has these like little moments of those like of this like very modernized dialogue for somebody who's a 2,000-year-old spirit.
Yes.
Where he's like, ah, they're back again. And they're not alone. That little bastard sorcerer exchends with them. It's like he's just like he's a nuisance to him. Like he's met him like many times. He's just like, oh God, he always takes my spot in front of the vending machine when I want my snack. Little bastard shit. Just something like that.
He's fucking great.
I love their relationship.
The whole fight scene of especially Wang and one of the storms jumping in the air constantly. Like you brought up Mortal Kombat. It's like, that's how everyone plays, man. Mortal Kombat.
It's
for
exactly how they jump in Mortal Kombat. Yeah.
It's how you win. It's just how you win. That's how you have to beat Gordo.
Those and uppercuts.
Yeah. Those and uppercuts.
Yes.
You guys remember uppercuts in Mortal Kombat?
Dude.
I was thinking Street Fighter.
All right.
So you do that.
I was thinking Street Fighter.
And then you get knocked back, and then you jump over, and then you uppercut them. It's formulaic.
Thank you.
Okay?
Let's talk about how the hero of this movie kills the villain of this movie with lipstick on.
Yeah.
Genius.
It's awesome.
It's fucking genius. Yeah. That they decide, didn't they like, that was not really in the script, like they just sort of said that would actually be really funny that he kissed her and got lipstick on, and I thought I read that I mean, this is just genius.
Well, I like how she's like as he like goes into battle again, she's like, oh, excuse me. Like, yes. Wipes it off for him like a wife would do.
Yeah.
You know?
Even at that moment where he's like, yeah, we just made out. Wang! Forgot all about Wang.
You quit rubbing your body against me? I told you, it's hard to concentrate when you do that. He just keeps making advances, like, at different times on Gracie Law, and it's just, like, not, like, nope, we're not going to do that.
So what do you think happens when this movie's over? Like, where does Jack go? Does he just, is this scene we see him driving down the road, does he just become this insane person, just... His podcast took a dark turn now. He's not eating sandwiches. He's drinking now, driving his truck. Does he die? Are the authorities after him? Has he gone? Has he gone into hiding somewhere, and now they're trying to find all these other guys, like, you know, Egg Shen, and be like, Egg Shen, what happened to this guy? We got to find him. Like, what happens after this movie's over?
I don't think this affects him personally whatsoever. Like, in his mind, I think this was like a normal kind of day's work. I think he rides off. I think he thinks he of himself as a, like a person who rides off into the sunset and is like, yeah, that was all in a day's work. Yeah, maybe I'll see that bitch later. I don't even know. But then, like, you get the monster that pops out, which I don't like. Let's say that just doesn't happen.
Let's pretend that doesn't happen.
Okay. I think he picks up his next haul somewhere. Let's say New York. I think he, like, goes to New York or something like that. And maybe he runs into a Rick Moranis. Maybe he runs into a Bill Murray of some sort and gets kind of caught up into some ghost shit. And he's like, I know what to do here.
He helps? You think he drains the Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, whatever.
What happened?
You fucking have something else? I don't know.
I'm love trying. That.
I'm the only one trying here. I have a theory that at the end of the movie, which is the beginning of the movie, Egg Shen says he's going on a long vacation, right? He's been fighting evil forever. So he leaves, but he's apprehended by police. And they take him to his the lawyer, and the lawyer's like, you're in big trouble. We got to talk about this. And he displays his Chinese black magic. And the authorities, they know this guy's trouble. Egg Shen's powerful. They don't want to arrest him, put him in jail. He's going to cause trouble there. So they make a deal with him. They say, you got to go. You got to go to somewhere where we're never going to find you. You just got to live out the rest of your life there. So he takes his vacation. He goes into the middle of nowhere. He moves to Perfection, Nevada, changes his name, opens up Chang's Market. We know he's a rich guy. That's the only way he would have possibly been able to keep that store open for that long, because there's nobody in Perfection buying shit. And then what if, even further, what if Ching Dai, God of the East, has been looking for Egg Shen and he creates Graboid monsters and sends them to Perfection?
Mm.
What if?
What if? Great Creed song.
It's a great, great Creed song. You're right, Sean. We should talk about Creed. No, let's not do that. I was going to say, I think that he's had enough of this and he just simply moves back to a different, he goes back to move closer to his family.
Who does?
Egg Shen.
Okay.
Yeah. And he renounces his sorcerism. But he really, really loves his grandchildren and trains them in the ways of Shenandoah.
Yes.
Egg Shenandoah. And that's what happens, guys. Yeah. I think that's what happens.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, last thing. We got
here's a prop.
Anybody got a good prop they want from this?
Yes.
Give me Jack's truck. Whatever.
You get his truck?
Yeah.
Sean's already checked out. Damn it.
He's already checked out.
God damn
it.
He's in vacation mode. He wants to go on a long vacation.
He is on the vacation mode. I want his boots with the knife.
Okay. I think you'd look good in those.
I think those boots are important. Like, he's always unwrapping his knife from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How many times he's like kneels down to get his knife. But yeah, but specifically with the knife, the compartment and everything. I think they'd fit me.
I've been thinking about taking up cocaine, so I want Lopan's Coke nail.
Nice.
The stinky one.
Do you want the finger like attached?
No, just the really long nail.
He's got two of them.
All of it.
I just want one. I don't want to be weird and have two.
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta play guitar with one, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to hit the fretboard.
It'd be pretty weird to just
Yeah.
Is that possible?
You're doubling down?
I think anything's possible.
You're double dipping? Oh no.
Well, we really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, boys?
Sure did.
Oh, we just lost half our audience. Okay.
Oh.
We have reviewed this with a modern eye because we don't even have nostalgia ratings for this. So we have to give a modern day rating for this movie. We're going to start with Sean. What'd you think, man? Now that you finally got to see this.
Yeah, I got through this finally. I don't know what it was and I don't know why it was, because I love this movie. I think it's incredibly fun. I think it's hilarious. I think anything with Kurt Russell, it just you just can't go wrong. This entire cast, really, Kim Cattrall as Gracie Law is great. All the supporting characters are incredible. These are who you cast at this point for these characters, and I think they all portrayed it perfectly. And John Carpenter makes a hell of a goddamn movie, as pretty much always. I'm gonna go 7.99.
Age. What about you, man?
7.99. Do I find this movie like oddly hilarious? I absolutely do. There's so much weirdness around it, though. Like I said, it continues to just get crazier and crazier until we start seeing random creatures. And there's the other part of it, too, is so much of the plot and so much of the story is borderline unnecessary. And the amount of exposition that is just thrown at us as we have to watch the movie is like, it's daunting. And so, and it also... It feels long. It feels
But it's not. It's like, what, an hour and a half or something like that?
Is it?
Roughly?
It's for some reason, like, I just kind of get caught in this, right, like, length. And so for all the comedy, there are very funny moments. For the funny moments, the dialogue, the lead actors, and the combination between Kurt Russell and Dennis Dunn with that whole supporting cast. That's just phenomenal. And I love John Carpenter movies. It turns out I've been really enjoying them as we've been going through a lot of them.
100%.
There's just something about this that it's very hard for me to want to revisit a lot. So that being said, I got to give credit where credit is due for what I think is a solid movie or fun watch. I don't know if necessarily want to be the one to be rewatching it. So I'm going to give this a 6.1.
I fucking love this movie. I was sitting by myself last night, just on the couch in the dark, finally in the peace of quiet, like laughing my ass off. I love this movie. I'm very excited to continue to watch it. I think it will be endlessly rewatchable. I'm gonna give it an 8.2.
Wow.
Fuck yeah.
I thought it was awesome. And that's gonna take us to a 7.43.
Wow.
Which on our whole entire list of movies we've ever done, that is going to get the sole spot of number 40 out of over 100 and something movies. That is just below Spaceballs, just above Monster Squad.
It should be above Spaceballs.
You think so?
Yes.
It's damn close. Damn close.
I think that's very fitting. Well, number 40.
I mean, this is gospel. This is what it is. When we come to an agreement on this, that's what it is. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for being here. Next week, May of Bay Uncaged.
Hit it.
Two Nick Cage movies, two Michael Bay movies, and one where they both have sex with each other.
They have scissor.
Think of it yourself. We're not even going to divulge it yet.
Yeah.
Think of it yourself.
Enjoy thinking about it.
We are ready. And if you are new to the podcast, go back this time last year, Red Dawn.
Wow.
Big one.
Red Dawn was a fun... We had all seen that one, right? This only happened once before, twice before, where we had not seen a movie.
Yeah.
I had not seen Red Dawn.
Right.
I have not revisited it since, but I had a great time on that episode.
Yes. Yeah, that was a good one.
That movie affected me.
And don't forget, we have a voicemail call set, 319-804-9596. Leave us some feedback like today's caller.
Are you friggin' kidding me? A 2.59, whatever, what the fuck? Super Mario Brothers that low? You kidding me? You've got to be kidding me. That is like, dude, I'm so pissed. I'm so pissed. That's like a 4 sober, a 6 drunk, and like a friggin' 12... Stone, you've got to be kidding. I've been listening to this podcast for so long. I pay $10 for Patreon. I listen to Dream Thief. I follow the Pork Tornadoes. I have a friggin' windbreaker from Wolf Den Wares in my cart right now. I haven't paid for it yet, but I'm going to. I'm so pissed at you guys. That's insane. You should be ashamed of yourself. Ugh. All right, Mike, Sean, AJ, I love you. Can't wait to the next episode. Diggity Dave out.
That's old Diggity Dave coming Diggity through Dave, on the voice.
Buddy. Thanks,
friend. That's how you do a voicemail.
That's right. That's
you get
right.
mad at us, and then you realize it doesn't matter, and you wait for next week.
Yeah. That's right.
That's honestly what I was thinking while reviewing Super Mario Brothers, and this whole week, actually. I can't... Disclosure, I just can't wait till we're done with that whole saga of our show. Yeah.
I gotta be honest, that was my fault. I don't know why I was like, dude, they're remaking Super Mario Brothers. We should do the original. I've never actually seen it, but we should do it. I'm sorry, guys.
I wanted to as well. I did. I wanted to as well, and I thought I had some fond memories, and then I was wrong. So
if you love it, I love it. That you love it.
I love that you love it. That's right.
I love you.
I love you, and I love that you love it. Guys, we love you regardless because you're listening to this show. And if you are listening to this show, we really hope that you will leave us a kind review so we can read it. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us 5 stars. We would love 5 stars. And find us anywhere on social media, too, at Confused Breakfast, just about anywhere on social media. And make sure you're checking out that YouTube, hitting that subscribe button. YouTube.
Go to ConfusedBreakfast.com and get some of our merch. You can buy shirts. You can buy mugs. You can buy koozies. I think you can buy sweatshirts, shower curtains. I don't even know what you can buy on there. But go look, and they probably have it. This show on vinyl. Go to ConfusedBreakfast.com as well to see our ratings. You can see that this just made 7.4. This is a little bit better than Monster Squad or something like that. Who cares? Who gives a shit? I'm on vacation at this point. No, you should care. You should care, and you should see our individual ratings as well on ConfusedBreakfast.com.
I just want Sean to do the full outro from here on out.
See ya.
I also like the way you say koozies. Steve Koozies.
Steve Koozies.
You can get some koozies, he says it. That's how he says it. You can get some Steve Koozies. Can we make a koozie with Steve Koozies' face on it?
It's gotta happen. Why haven't we done that yet?
It's not your father's beer shirt. What are you doing with your life?
It's just the janitor of when he walks by him. Like.
Can you hand me a Steve Koozie? Is that Sean says it? Steve Koozies.
Oh, you can buy some koozies.
I don't know why I've never noticed that, but you always say that. I don't know. You get some shirts, some stickers, some koozies. Anyway, go to patreon.com/confusedbreakfast. Just support us there. Support our sponsors. We are part of it. We are produced by the Upload Media Group here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Learn more about them at uploadmediagroup.com. Craig on the controls.
Craigers.
And we are on the Cloud 10 iHeart Podcast Network. Learn more there at cloud10.fm. Well, I'm leaving.
Why?
Oh, my God.
Checks in the mail.
Checks in the mail.
That's from the movie Big Trouble Little China, which we just reviewed. I hope somebody gets the joke.
That quote.
Fuck.
Hey guys, I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Elmetson.
And we're the hosts of your new favorite show, The Psychologist RN. Each week, we go episode by episode talking about our favorite moments from psych, sharing behind-the-scenes stories, incredible memories, and even have drop-ins from our best friends and fellow cast and crew. If this sounds up your alley, listen to The Psychologist RN on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.